Hi, this is Hugh Cornwell, and welcome to this Mr. DeMille FM podcast. If you have any comments, suggestions, or simply want to get in touch, then please email info@mrdemillefm.com. In this programme, we talk to John Altman about his experiences in the world of film scores. I hope you enjoy the show. This afternoon, I've got a very distinguished guest here that I'm happy to welcome, John Altman. Welcome, John. And John's come in with a selection of some of his favourite pieces of film music. Maybe we should... What would you say your calling card is for people who are thinking, oh, yeah, John Altman, I vaguely know that name. You know, how would you best like to be...
That's a tricky one. I don't know. I suppose composer, arranger, conductor... saxophonist.
Well, that's quite a lot.
It is. A few things.
Quite a lot. Well, of course, I mean, people that are into film will obviously know your name, but you know, there might be the odd person ironing a shirt that doesn't know much about it. So in the course of the next hour or so, you'll find out more about John and about his choice of music and everything about him. John, you brought in a selection of pieces of film music here to play, to share with us. And the first one on the list is by Miklos Rosa. Rosa. The Thief of Baghdad. Now, I was very surprised when I saw your list and saw this at the top, because it's one of my favourite films.
It's just mine too.
Absolutely fabulous.
And everything about it is great. Oh. It's a
beautiful story.
Beautiful story, beautifully filmed, against all odds, with about three or four different directors.
Yeah.
Halfway through the filming, they had to take it away from the UK because the war started and all kinds of problems beset it. Early Technicolor. It's ravishingly beautiful.
Yes.
The restored prints, the blues and greens are stunning.
Yeah.
And the score is masterful. It's Miklos Rosa's first big film score. And the original director was a guy called Ludwig Berger, who was an ancient Viennese, who hired a Viennese composer who wrote sort of turn-of-the-century waltzes to score the film. And Alexander Korda, who, like Miklos Rosa, was Hungarian, who was a sort of patron of Miklos Rosa, was sort of tearing his hair out, saying, how do we get rid of this guy with this archaic music that doesn't work for the film? So they suggested that... I think it was one of the Korda brothers. One was the art director on the film.
Right.
And he said, why don't you... we'll give you the office next to Ludwig Berger. Why don't you just sit and play your ideas for the film over and over and over again?
And hopefully,
he'll knock on the door and say, what's that you're playing, young man?
And get influenced by it.
Yes. So he sat in there and he played over and over again this sort of theme for the film. And Ludwig Berger stuck his head in and said, oh, what's that you're playing?
Yeah.
He said, well, it's just an idea I've got for the music for Thief of Baghdad I know you're making. And Berger went, oh, yes, that sounds pretty good. So they wound up hiring him, and he wrote the most magnificent score.
Wow.
The most phenomenal themes and just gorgeous music, which put him on the map as a film score composer.
And would it be right in thinking that they did, in those days, where they did put any music on films after they'd been made?
Yeah.
Just like happens now.
Yes. Yeah. They worked that out pretty quickly.
Yeah.
In the early days of sound, they did it all. Not only did they do it all live, but the film moguls said, the audience will not accept the noise of an orchestra unless you see one. So a lot of the early sound films, like the Marx Brothers, Coconuts, you've got the band in view,
so that
the music doesn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, let's take a listen to this. It's the Eternal Love theme.
Yeah, beautiful theme. Thank you.
That was the eternal love theme from The Thief of Baghdad by Miklos Roza. Now we're going on to a Kirk Douglas film. It's one of my favourite actors.
Mm.
I saw him in Ace in the Hole the other day.
Oh, yes. It's a Billy Wilder film.
Yeah, great movie. And you've picked some music by David Raxin from The Bad and the Beautiful. So now, what is it about this that you like so much?
Well, David was a very interesting man. I got to know him in later years in L.A. when he'd really become a professor of musicology, ethnomusicology. Right. He always told people that he was an academic. But, of course, his first break in films was as taking down Charlie Chaplin's music for Modern Times. He sort of wrote it all down and arranged it. But his first big movie was Laura, and he wrote that fantastic song, for the film noir of
classic
Gene Tierney and Donna Andrews. I didn't even need to look it up.
Yeah.
So he wrote the score for Laura with Gene Tierney and Donna Andrews.
Right.
And The Bad and the Beautiful
afterwards, right?
Yeah, it was early 50s. And very interestingly, he wrote this marvellous theme that just goes on and on and on. It's one of the most beautiful themes. And the producer apparently knocked on Andre Previn's door. Andre, at the time, was the musical director of MGM.
Right.
And said, "Can I ask you something?" He said, "Can you tell me if this is any good?" He said, "It just seems to go on forever. The audiences won't understand this music."
Yeah, yeah.
And Andre Previn played it on the piano and said, "This is fantastic." He said, if you don't use this, you'll be mad.
Yeah.
So this is the main theme to The Bad and Beautiful, which is a glorious, soaring movie theme. Really fantastic.
Good. Let's have a listen to that. I just wanted to ask something, because you said that you got to know David Rax in his later years, so in LA. So how long have you been based in LA? I could say that you're based there, is that correct?
Not really based there. I've been sort of commuting there for 22 years now.
So you came in touch, in contact with him when you first got there?
I did, yes. Ah,
and what did you end up working with him at?
No, at that point he was really a teacher at USC.
Uh-huh.
And he hadn't, which was shameful, I mean, but it's one of those awful facts of Hollywood, where neither he nor Johnny Mandel nor Henry Mancini were working, you know, because they wanted
new young people,
young blood. So all these great composers with, you know, who've forgotten more about scoring films than most people know, were being ignored, you know, and not utilised.
What, becoming teachers?
Yeah, so he'd become a teacher at the film school.
Right.
And he seemed very happy, you know, but it's a shame that he wasn't allowed the opportunity to write into the modern era.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Sort of his career ended in the early 60s almost.
Yeah, yeah. And what had taken you to LA in that first time?
I'd done a movie called Hear My Song, which was a surprise hit in the States. And on the back of that, I was asked to go over and score a couple of American films, and I started working in Hollywood, basically.
Right. I see. Good. So we're moving on now to... a very famous film. You've selected the theme from Chinatown.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because every film composer has come across the dreaded replacement where your score is thrown out and somebody else is hired to do it. And this is a replacement score. I once got asked into a meeting and they said, we've had this score done by Jerry Goldsmith, but we don't like it, so could you write something? And I said, if you think I'm going to write anything up to the quality of what Jerry Goldsmith writes, forget it. But this is a score that he did for a Polanski film, and he wrote it in 2 weeks because the original score was rejected.
Oh, I see, and he had a limited
time. So he had a limited time. And it's the most perfect score for the film. It's, as you know, it's a sort of an homage to the film noir of the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, and the water barons in
LA, yes. Yeah. And it's an amazing film, and his theme is marvellous and beautifully played by Ewan Raisi on trumpet, who... Again, I got to know really well. I met Goldsmith once, but Ewan I knew in later years. He passed away a few months ago at the age of 92 or thereabouts. Charming man. And this was his sort of his apex of his playing career, I think.
Good. So let's hear. Should we hear that? The theme from Chinatown.
Yep.
So, anything about Chinatown that you can reveal to us?
Well, that it's interesting that with you know, a score that was actually written as a replacement, very last minute, 2 weeks to do it, you can't imagine that movie with anything else.
No.
It defines the film. And it's interesting that there are so many scores in existence that absolutely define the film.
Yeah.
Sometimes there are great films with a great score. Sometimes they're not so great films but with a great score. Mm. But they absolutely define the film more than maybe an acting performance or a director or whatever it might be. You know, the score is the thing that defines it in everybody's mind.
I'm glad you said that, because that's the whole point of this radio show station is the importance of film music. So moving on, we're going to go over to cross back over to this side of the Atlantic, I think, for Blythe Spirit, Richard Adinsall.
Yeah, this is just an absolute favourite score of mine. Richard Adinsall's probably best known for the Warsaw Concerto that he wrote for Dangerous Moonlight. And I was very good friends with Terence Young, the director of the early Bond films, who wrote the screenplay for Dangerous Moonlight. And he told me a very funny story about the fact that they'd hired Rachmaninoff to write the music for the film, who was in Los Angeles at the time during the war. And they had no piano music, and Anton Walbrook, who was the pianist in the film, who actually played, although he didn't play on the soundtrack, he had to mime to the piano concerto.
Yeah.
They were getting desperate for the music, and it wasn't forthcoming. So they had to make a phone call to Rachmaninoff in Los Angeles. Now, the only transatlantic phone line during the war was at 10 Downing Street. That was the only way you could call. But Terence was friendly with Sarah Churchill, Churchill's daughter, who was an actress. So she got him into 10 Downing Street to make the phone call.
Fantastic.
They all had to sign the Official Secrets Act, and there was an army officer standing next to them, and they got through on the line, and Rachmaninoff was at the other end.
Yeah.
And Terence said, Maestro Rachmaninoff, we are the film company from London, and we need your music. Could you please tell us when we're going to get it? And Rachmaninoff went, huh?
Yeah.
They said, oh, we need the music for the film. Yeah. He went, huh?
Mm? He didn't speak English.
No. So Terence suddenly went, ah, he knew he'd lived in Paris. So he went, parlez-vous français? And Rachmaninoff went, ah, oh, oui! Yeah. And at that moment, the army major slammed the receiver down.
Ah.
I said, what are you doing? He said, you've started talking in a foreign language.
And we can't be sure what you're saying.
We don't know what you're saying. You might be passing secrets. This phone call is over.
That's funny.
So they hired Richard Adinsall to write the music for the
film.
That's
funny.
And this is another theme of his for Blythe Spirit. And what I was saying about music defining the moment in the film, this is the moment when Margaret Rutherford is Madame Arcati. And she's riding her bicycle down the main street, sort of about to meet the ghost of Constance Cummings. And it's just such a perfect piece of music for that scene.
For that, yeah.
And also so redolent of its time.
Right.
You know, it's got nostalgia without knowing. I think it's the recording quality and the way the trumpets play.
Yeah.
But it's just a period piece. It's gorgeous.
Good, let's have a listen. So I was going to say that there's another case there where Rachmaninoff didn't actually write anything, but Richard Anderson was brought in. Have you ever been brought in to a project after someone has dropped out?
I've had both. I've been brought in to replace something.
And replaced.
And I've been replaced.
Would you like to tell us about?
The one I was replaced on, I never actually wrote anything for in the first place. So I thought that's interesting how they can replace you before you've written a note of music, you know, and pay you in full, which is fine.
Yeah.
But I was replaced on a terrible disaster called Town and Country, which I think is still like the most expensive flop in history. It was a film with Warren Beatty and Goldie Hawn and Diane Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And it dragged on for 2 years, during which time there were innumerable power struggles and changes. And I got a phone call one day saying, you're off the film. Nothing you've done or said or written or played. It's just they want to try something else. They changed their mind. So I said, okay, right. And they said, of course, we'll pay you in full. They paid me in full for doing nothing, which is
amazing.
Quite nice. But
and what was the other case where you replaced someone?
That was a film called Camilla, which was a film with Bridget Fonda and Jessica Tandy, where they'd had a score done by a sort of rock composer, and they felt they weren't getting any of the sort of emotions of the movie across, so
right.
I had to sort of come in and put that in.
Right. And did you embellish, or did you completely change it?
No, I started from scratch.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, can you reveal who it was who had written the original thing?
It was Daniel Lanois.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Well, a very well-respected name in his own right.
I also wrote the, which we'll come to, the Tank Chase for Goldeneye.
Oh, well, we'll get to that later.
Which is also the same story.
Yeah. Okay, so now the next one is some music by Alex North from Streetcar Named Desire.
Yeah.
So what can you tell us about this?
Well, this is really the first movie score that employed a sort of jazz sensibility. And I really like it because it's got that sort of 40s feel to it, and the film noir element is there.
Mm-hmm.
But also you get an inkling of the influence of jazz and that sort of thing, which that up to then hadn't really been used.
What year are you talking about there?
So it's 1950, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a sort of new way of scoring.
Right.
And it's great music, which
right.
is... Alex North is one of the masters. Somehow his star has waned.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, you know, over the... Maybe it was because he wrote that score for... 2001 that never got used, that was replaced by
another one of those stories.
Yeah, where they had temp tracks on the film.
Yeah,
that the editor had put on, which were the Strauss waltzes.
Yes.
And the Thus Spake Zarathustra.
They probably end up with demoitis. That's what they fell in love with the demos.
That's it.
That's what happens in the music business.
Totally.
Yeah,
but this is Streetcar Named Desire.
So that was Alex North's theme from Streetcar Named Desire. This next film you've chosen, I don't know, can you tell me something about it? Kid for Two Farthings.
Okay, this is an interesting one. I love British movies of the 50s, probably because I grew up in London in the 50s. And this is, it's a Wolf Mankiewicz fable about a boy in the East End of London who's always wanted a unicorn, and he finds a unicorn in the market. Well, it's actually a goat. But there's a sort of mystical feeling about whether this really is a unicorn after all.
Mm.
And the cast is full of British character players, Diana Dawes, Sid James, David Kossoff, Primo Carnera, the boxer, Harold Berens, and it's full of East End, sort of the East End that was, that's right. No more. And Benjamin Frankel, who's a very fine composer, wrote a score sort of using London. It's a bit like the theme to EastEnders in a funny way. It's using London sounds. And it's just got that magic and mystery, and it's very simple but very, very effective. And spot on, you know, bang on. So this is Kid for Two Farthings.
So that was the theme, intro theme from Kid for Two Farthings by Benjamin Frankel, the film directed by Carol Reed.
Mm-hmm.
And you read out some fabulous names there. Irene Handel,
Sidney Taffler.
Oh, God.
Great British characters.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to now move on to a very, very well-known film and a very well-known film music writer. The film is The Mission, Ennio Morricone.
Mm-hmm.
And now, what prompts the choice of this?
Well, oddly enough, I was at some of the recording sessions for the film. I wasn't participating, but it was recorded at CTS Studios in Wembley, and I was doing a TV series up there in Studio 2, and Morricone was in Studio 1. And I've always been a huge fan of his music, so I asked and was granted permission to sneak in and stand at the back and listen. And not only did I hear the first run-through of this particular piece, but an interesting thing that happened during the recording was he had the choir in the studio. I've never seen anyone do this before. He had them all take off their shoes and suspended two mics, overhead mics, and when they sang, they all walked around and moved around. And the effect was, I can't describe, because voices were coming, that individual voices were coming in and going and coming and going. He had them all on the move.
Very clever.
So, and he had sections mixed up, so you had sopranos and the baritone here and a tenor there. And they would all walk through and you'd hear individual voices, but you'd also hear the overall blend.
Yeah.
I thought, I must use that sometime. I've never had the chance. One day,
Clever idea, very clever.
So Chris O'Neill is playing Gabriel's oboe, which, of course, is now become a crossover classic, as it were.
Yeah, because of this use.
Because of the film. And it's a great score for... perhaps not the greatest film ever made.
But the score is
sensational.
Yeah, I think it's one of those cases where the score is more famous than the film.
Definitely.
Yeah. So there we had the theme from The Mission, Ennio Morricone. Now we're going to move on to a film called Funny Bones, which I think you composed and conducted, John, on this. So yes, do you want to tell us something about this?
Well, Funny Bones was a Peter Charlson film. It's the second film I did with him. It's a very dark film about comedy and the nature of comedy. And I wanted to write a very percussive score. And I wanted to use Alex Acuna, the percussionist of Weather Report, because I always love Weather Report and their music, and I always thought there was something very sinister about all their tracks, you know. And I thought it'd be great to have a sort of relentless percussion track that also is very menacing, but without being, you know, without being sort of Jaws and scary or something.
Right, right.
But somehow Alex intuitively or not knowingly or whatever it might be understood how you did that. You know, Joe Zawinul understood it with Weather Report. And I thought, if I can tap into that, that's what I want. So for this particular scene, where which is towards the finale of the film, we've got exactly that. We have this percussion being played by, you know, by Alex, and it builds up this sort of intensity of the sequence. It's just great. A scene I'm very proud of.
It's called In the Ring.
Thank you.
you have special dispensation. You can talk about another piece that you're involved in, which don't normally allow people to do, but seeing as it's you, this is something you did with Monty Norman on a Bond movie.
Yes, I mean, I've known Monty for years, but in fact, I didn't do this with him. But of course, he wrote the James Bond theme, the classic James Bond theme. And I orchestrated and conducted the score for Goldeneye for a French composer, Eric Serra, with whom I'd already worked a couple of times on Leon and another film for Luc Besson. And the piece that Eric wrote for the sort of climactic tank chase through St. Petersburg was very radical, very out of left field, and the producers didn't like it. So they said, we need it more traditional, James Bond. So they called me and I said, well, look, if Eric's okay with it, I'll do it. And he was, you know, reluctantly said, yeah, fine. And they said, you know what we want? And I said, yes, I know exactly what we want. Because the, you know, you dream all your life of writing an action sequence for a Bond movie.
Yeah.
So I wrote it, and it's the sort of the famous tank chase in Goldeneye.
Great.
And I wrote it on the Sunday and recorded it on the Monday.
Great.
Basically.
Let's have a listen to that. So you wrote that on the Sunday and went in on the Monday to record it?
Pretty much, yeah.
In London. Now, and so what do you do? Ring up musicians on the...
I have my booker, yes, who says, in this case, it's over 100 musicians, you know, so she had to scramble around and get an orchestra.
On a Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, pretty much.
And where was it recorded?
At CTS, in the big room where the mission was recorded.
What's CTS to people who don't?
CTS Studios used to be at Wembley.
Right.
It's now a hole in the ground in front of Wembley Stadium.
It doesn't exist anymore.
It was pulled down to build the new Wembley Stadium, and then they didn't put anything on the spot where it was.
Oh, my God. Not even a little plaque or something.
No. And Star Wars was done there. Oh. The Mission was done there. The Pink Panther was done there.
Oh, wow.
Sad.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a great shame. Waste. That's a great shame. So you had over 100 musicians in this place. It must have been a very vast room.
Yeah.
Big room to put all those people in. And so they read a score and just recorded it in a few hours and to your contentment.
Yeah.
That's great. Now we're going to go on to a very, very famous film and music, a very successful film and a very successful musical score to go with the film, sort of inseparable. Magnificent Seven and Elmore Bernstein.
Mm.
So tell us something about this.
Well, Elmer Bernstein was a great champion of me in my early days. When I was in my early mid-20s, for some reason he took a liking to me and he started hiring me to write arrangements for him. And I did a couple of films as his arranger.
This was in London?
In London, yeah.
Right.
And he would just... you know, send me bits of music, and I'd say, "What do you want me to do?" He said, "Whatever you like, you know, whatever you feel
fantastic.
Like."
Fantastic!
You know? So it was great.
That's fabulous.
Someone, as you say, who really made a film theme for all time.
We'll be right back. Okay, John, your penultimate choice is some music by Frank Waxman, who was very active in the film noir genre, writing music, screenplays. And you picked the theme from Night in the City.
Night in the City, yeah.
Tell me something about this film. I'm not familiar with this one.
It's Jules Dassin's film. He made some great... Later, he was, of course, married to Melina Mercouri, and he did sort of Never on a Sunday and things like that. But he was a great sort of master of the film noir genre. And Night in the City is about a wrestling promoter, Richard Widmark, who wants to get in and falls in with the gangsters and the usual sort of film noir type setup.
Yeah.
But Waxman, who's another emigre from Europe, like Korngold, just wrote marvellously evocative music that fitted that genre perfectly. You instantly know what the milieu of the film is. But it's interesting, isn't it, that almost has the same sort of vibe as the Kid for Two Farthings, with the sort of the city bell noise.
Very
evocative. It's sort of program music in a way, as you said. You feel the city and you feel the heat and the monotony and the danger. And that's something that he and Bernard Herrmann and Miklos Rosa
all got it spot on. That's right. And no one's doing it these days. About the only film really that you get that is when a Bond film starts, you get that music and you're put in the zone. But
then that's a series that you've come to expect it in. I mean, yes. One-off standalone. I'm trying to think of, and it shouldn't necessarily be throwback films to the 50s, necessarily. I mean, like L.A. Confidential, for example.
Right.
But, I mean, modern films should have that element as well, somehow, of thematic material.
Well, and it gives them a uniqueness, the film, doesn't it, in a way? The when they reinterpret the original beginning theme in different contexts later on in the film, in a melancholic...
Structural unity.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's another character in the film.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, after lamenting all that, it's all very sad news, this... We're going to end on a more upbeat note. Some music by Henry Mancini, famous for the Pink Panther, obviously.
Yes, indeed.
But we picked something a bit more upbeat, the Peter Gunn TV series theme.
Yeah, this was an interesting... How this came about was Mancini was getting a shave and a haircut, and Blake Edwards, whom he knew, was in the next chair, and Blake said, "Oh, I'm doing this new show, you know, do you fancy writing the music for it?" That's how it all came about.
That's fantastic.
And their partnership went on forever, you know.
And it started in the hairdressing salon.
It started in the barbershop, indeed.
So it doesn't always have to be a golf course.
No, exactly. and this was also a yardstick because it was the first real TV theme that had a popular music stroke jazz 50s feel to it. And Mancini was very influential because he brought that sensibility into the movies.
Yeah.
They're very much a contemporary feeling for that time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a great theme as well. I mean, yeah. it was a huge hit as a pop song.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just terrific.
Yeah. Well, John, thanks very much for coming in today, and wish you all the best with all your future projects.
Thank you.
I'm sure you'll be going backwards and forwards to between LA and London, commuting, as you put it, for a long time yet. And thanks again for coming in and
My
sharing
pleasure.
Your music with us. Thank you.
Thank you.